Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. As a dramatic week in American politics continues, tonight President Obama delivers his farewell address. WNYC will have live coverage at 9 o'clock tonight, and in a little while we will preview that speech and the enormous meaning of this enormous transition after 8 years of Barack Obama to we don't know how long of Donald Trump. That's coming up with Jamelle Bouie, Slate's chief political correspondent, in a few minutes. He's actually going to argue, among other things, that Obama's approach to the transition has been inadequate, too normalizing of Donald Trump. So we will hear that from Jamelle Bouie coming up. Also, a preview of tomorrow. Donald Trump is supposed to hold his first news conference since July at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, and we will bring you that live if it happens as scheduled at that time during our show. Today, the first confirmation hearing for a Trump nominee is beginning. It's for Attorney General nominee Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the most controversial of all the picks, because of his record on race, sexuality, immigration, and religion, among other things, and how they might affect how justice is defined in the United States with him in office. The New York Times produced this little 18-second montage of the kinds of things Sessions has said that raises questions.
Most governments in the world have defined marriage as between a man and a woman.
Our duty as elected officials is to get our people jobs first.
Protecting their interests, and we haven't been doing so.
We've admitted 1.5 million immigrants from Muslim countries since 9/11.
We will listen this morning to portions of the confirmation hearing, especially ones that illuminate important issues. It's not all we'll do on the show today, but we'll start by talking about it and we'll end with it. As our first guest is New York Times Magazine correspondent Emily Bazelon, who writes frequently about legal affairs and wrote an article about one especially telling case from when Sessions was a U.S. attorney in Alabama during the Reagan administration. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So that case was about, of all things, voter fraud. And spoiler alert, Sessions lost. But what happened in Perry County, Alabama in the 1980s?
Well, I think to understand this case, you have to back up a little bit to the Jim Crow history in Alabama and the South, in which almost no African Americans were registered to vote. So in the 60s, a man named Albert Turner, who would become the chief defendant in the voter fraud case that Sessions brought. In the 60s, Turner started organizing other black people to try to get the right to vote. And, you know, this was obviously a time, this is dangerous stuff to be doing. But he started an organization in Perry County. He was also an advisor to Martin Luther King. And then after the voting rights passed in 1965, he and other civil rights activists, including his wife Evelyn, continued to organize voters. And they were in a majority black county, but they were having trouble getting African-American candidates elected. And one reason for that was a high rate of absentee voting among white residents. And there was some evidence that some white people who no longer lived in Perry County were actually voting. So Turner complained about that to the Department of Justice. They didn't do anything. And then he learned the law of absentee voting. And he and other civil rights activists started visiting rural black voters and talking to them about the ballot and helping them vote, which is legal under the Voting Rights Act. Then the election started to get closer. And some of the white people in Perry County who were aligned with other black candidates, there was a kind of coalition opposing the civil rights people. And people in that coalition, black and white, complained to the local district attorney about the black absentee voting efforts. And then those complaints went up to Jeff Sessions. And so he brought a voter fraud prosecution against Albert Turner, his wife Evelyn, and one other civil rights activist, you know, because of these absentee voting practices, which black people had learned how to do and were helping them and the civil rights folks take some political power in Perry County.
How big a deal was the case at the time?
It was a very big deal. For one thing, there hadn't really been a case like this. I mean, if you take a step back, for a U.S. attorney, the full might of the federal government to come down in a case, this, we're talking about county elections, small stuff, and the number of disputed absentee ballots was fewer than 30. And they hadn't determined the result of the election either. So to have a big federal prosecution in which these three civil rights activists were threatened with decades in prison if they were convicted, that was a big deal. And so the NAACP, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Center for Constitutional Equality, people came in and defended these civil rights activists and, you know, really tried to push back.
I want to go to the hearing for just a minute before we continue on this, because what's happening right now is that Sessions is being introduced by maybe the most moderate Republican senator in the entire U.S. Senate, Susan Collins of Maine, which is supposed to be one of the big advertisements for this idea that his radicalism, his deep conservatism, his possible racism and other forms of bigotry are, you know, being over-advertised. Let's just listen to a little bit. Maybe we'll just do this for a few seconds or a minute, see if we can get a sense of how Senator Susan Collins is introducing Jeff Sessions at his confirmation hearing.
Trade agreements and practices that hurt American workers. What I want this committee and the American people to know is that Jeff Sessions is the same genuine, fair-minded person in unguarded private moments as he is in the halls of the Senate. We first came to know each other during dinners with other members of our Senate class, where we discussed everything from our politics to our families. I have never witnessed anything to suggest that Senator Sessions is anyone other than a dedicated public servant and a decent man. In 1980, long before he ran for the Senate or even dreamed of being Attorney General, Jeff Sessions sponsored the first African-American member of the Mobile Lions Club. As U.S. Attorney, he provided leadership in the successful convictions of two Klan members who had murdered an African-American teenager. As ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee in 2009, he appointed the first African-American to serve as chief counsel to the Republican members. My friends, these are not the actions of an individual who is motivated by racial animus.
All right. Susan Collins live in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room introducing Senator Jeff Sessions. Emily Bazelon, who writes about legal affairs for the New York Times Magazine, is with us. Boy, from that, he was like Martin Luther King Sessions.
Right. So Susan Collins, you know, has obviously a long collegial relationship with the Senate. The Senate is a place in which people are famously chummy. And she is arguing here that he is not a man who has racism in his heart. And I suppose my question would be, in 2017, is that the only question we should ask about the Attorney General? Should we also be asking about how he will enforce civil rights laws and protect, you know, different kinds of groups in this country? That is a key function of the Department of Justice. And I think the reason that civil rights groups have such profound doubts about Sessions, they go back to the voter fraud prosecution we were talking about, but they also have to do with his record over the last 30 years. He has voted against the Voting Rights Act. He has complained about it. He's spoken out against LGBT rights. And he's the most extreme right-wing person in the Senate on immigration, opposing legal as well as many legal forms of immigration as well as illegal immigration. So I think that's the full picture here. It's not, you know, what does this man, is he a nice man? Does he have some African-American friends and colleagues? But also, what is his record on civil rights and what's he likely to do as Attorney General?
Listeners, your questions about Jeff Sessions, this case that Emily Bazelon singled out to write about from the 80s or anything else, or anything you want to say as this confirmation hearing begins. We'll go back in later in the show as warranted, and we'll have some highlights that our producers are listening for to pick out in the last 20 minutes or so of the show later on this morning to hear what's been really important in the early going in this testimony. But as I say, we'll also dip in live, if warranted, as we did just there, to listen to a little bit of Susan Collins. But anyone with a question or a thought, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Emily Bazelon. So I guess it would be fair to say you singled out this 1980s case, this voter fraud case that Sessions lost, not because it's one of the most extreme things Sessions ever did and interesting for that reason, but because it's somehow central and representative of who Jeff Sessions might be as Attorney General?
Well, that's certainly the way the civil rights community views it. The other reason that I wanted to write about it was that I didn't think the story had really been told recently in a way that was full and accurate. I was seeing a lot of portrayals of this case, some by Sessions transition officials and really mostly by the right-wing press that just weren't accurate. And so it seemed important to fully tell the story and give people the context so they can decide for themselves.
Is there a question you would like to hear him ask today at his confirmation hearing relevant to this case that reflects not just on the past but on what kind of attorney general he might be tomorrow and the next day?
Well, I think that the senators could ask him if he has any regrets about how this case was prosecuted, and they could bring up some of the specifics about using the full might of the federal government against civil rights activists in a context in which there was this history of the black vote being chilled. And then I think they could ask him about what his commitments to civil rights are. And there are some big cases right now involving voting rights where the Obama administration has come in on behalf, for example, of opposing restrictive voter ID laws or redistricting that seems to be racial gerrymandering. And the senators could ask Sessions whether he intends to continue those positions by the Obama administration or whether he's planning to change them.
You know, sometimes I get frustrated as a journalist and interviewer in confirmation hearings, because senators may be good at rhetoric and giving speeches, but they're not always good at asking questions that elicit real answers and force real answers. Some who've been prosecutors are probably the best at it. Do you get frustrated like that as a journalist ever watching Senate confirmation hearings?
Yes, for sure. I mean, I'm not saying I would be able to do anything like a better job, but, you know, even the questions I just suggested, you could imagine the hedging and the, well, I'll wait to see how I get there answers. But one thing the senators could try to do is Sessions is now trying to present himself as more of an advocate for civil rights. And whether or not that's the case based on his past record, they could ask him what he thinks that commitment entails today and what he would actually do to further civil rights on behalf of racial minorities, on behalf of LGBT people, women. They could try to get him to make those kinds of commitments. And then we can test and see what happens when he's in office.
Nathan in Flatbush, you're on WNYC with Emily Bazelon. Hi, Nathan. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. I want to know Emily's opinion about Senator Sessions' opinions and history on voter rights. I think that was a huge issue in the last election and voter suppression, specifically with voter ID and all these other kind of things that they did to keep people away from the polls, and how he's going to handle that and address that moving forward.
Well, Sessions voted in favor, I believe, of continuing the Voting Rights Act when it passed unanimously in front of the Senate, but he also has complained about it, and he celebrated the Supreme Court decision in 2013, the case called Shelby County, in which the Supreme Court essentially gutted a key provision of the Voting Rights Act, which gave the Department of Justice oversight over a lot of states, most of them in the South. And then the other thing he is on the record about is talking about voter impersonation fraud as a big problem. This is, you know, the motivation Republicans have given for passing voter ID laws, this idea that people show up at the polls and they vote under a false identity. And he has really furthered that idea. There is really no evidence to support that being a widespread problem or even like a significant problem in the country. And so, that's another thing that the senators could ask him about today.
Nathan, thank you. Todd on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Todd.
Thank you very much for letting me talk. I really appreciate your show.
Sure.
My comment on one side, I have two sides of, is that my feeling is that Trump and the other nominees are motivated simply to get into power, and that they'll say anything that they want to say, that they think people will allow them to get into to be nominated, but they're saying what the Republicans want to hear, and my feeling is that what the Republicans want to hear is in the end their fundamental motivation is to make abortion illegal, and that has civil rights implications. And how would we know that they have there's anything other than simply wanting to be in power, simply wanting to do something like make abortion
right.
illegal?
Okay. Well, just wanting power for power's sake and having a view on a particular issue like abortion rights are sort of two different things. But Emily, give me a quick answer to that. Then we're going to listen to a little of Seth. You know what? Let's do it now. Hold your answer to this. We're going to dip back into the hearing. Sessions is giving his opening statement. Let's just hear a little bit of what he's saying. And obviously there's a protest going on right now. People are chanting, no KKK, no fascists. And that's our audio problem. We're not being censored. As protesters are being led out by police, Sessions not looking in their direction, just kind of looking down and passively.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, dear friends, I want to thank Richard Shelby, my colleague, and Senator Susan Collins for the kind and generous introductions. It was very moving and touching for me. It's hard to believe, really, that the three of us have served together in this body for almost 20 years. When I arrived in the Senate in 1997, I probably wouldn't have anticipated becoming so close with a colleague from Maine, two people from the northernmost part of our country and the southernmost part of our country.
It's a little hard to hear that protester's words. Emily Bazelon, that's at least two interruptions already. Maybe this is representative of what the Trump administration is going to be like, action and protest from day one in a sort of new normal or new abnormal America. This maybe is representative, these first moments of the first hearing, of what it's going to be like in the United States for some time to come. But for you who covers legal affairs, how do so many protesters, because this is now at least two outbursts that we've taken live, how do they get into a Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing room?
Well, presumably they stood in line with everyone else, and the law enforcement people in the Senate chamber don't know who might erupt in protest. I assume those protesters will be arrested, and that's supposed to be a disincentive for disrupting a proceeding in that way. You know, there's a lot of passion about this nominee, and I think you're hearing that on the floor right now.
Let's listen to a little bit more of Jeff Sessions giving his opening statement.
In impartiality and equal justice under law. Over the years, you've heard me say many times that I love the Department of Justice. The Office of Attorney General of the United States is not a normal political office, and anyone who holds it must have total fidelity to the laws and the Constitution of the United States. He or she must be committed to following the law. He or she must be willing to tell the president or other top officials if he or they overreach. He or she cannot be a mere rubber stamp. He or she must set the example for the employees of the department to do the right thing and ensure that when they do the right thing, they know the Attorney General will back them up. no matter what politician might call or what powerful special interest, influential contributor, or friend might try to intervene.
Jeff Sessions speaking live at his confirmation hearing. We'll keep going back in. We're talking to Emily Bazelon, legal affairs correspondent for the New York Times Magazine, among other things she writes for the magazine. And that stretch was interesting to me right off the bat, Emily, because he's professing his love for the Justice Department. The Times, you probably saw their breakout of various quotes by Sessions over the years as a senator. And one of the quotes from a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in November of 2015 is Sessions saying, "It's clear that police officers all over America are concerned about the Department of Justice." So he doesn't always just have this gooey-eyed adoration of the Justice Department and its actions. Are you familiar with that particular quote?
Yes, I am familiar with it. It has to do with some, you know, there's been mixed feelings among police departments about the Obama administration Justice Department's investigations of those departments in places like Ferguson and Baltimore and Cleveland. And so there was a hearing at which Sessions very much took the Justice Department to task for trying to investigate law enforcement and make sure they're complying with the law. He was also very critical of the Obama Justice Department for refusing to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. So, you know, that's an LGBT issue. And I think it was also noteworthy in what we heard just then from Sessions, he said that he thinks it's important for the Attorney General not to be a rubber stamp for the president. So that's a clear sign that he's trying to say he would sign up for Trump. In this context, some of his critics have noted that as a senator, he supported George W. Bush's warrantless wiretapping program and also the Justice Department memos that authorized waterboarding as a form of torture. So, you know, we have a sort of mixed record on this front.
To the previous caller's question, which we didn't get to answer before that excerpt, before we dipped in live, is abortion rights something under the purview of the Attorney General that could be affected by Sessions' personal views about abortion rights?
Well, yes, in the sense that the Justice Department, in cases where abortion rights are on the line, may take a position, either as a friend of the court or if we're talking about a law Congress has passed, then they would be defending the law. And so you could imagine a situation in which there's an abortion rights case in front of the Supreme Court, and the Justice Department has asked for its opinion, and Sessions plays a role in deciding, you know, whether to defend an abortion restriction statute if Congress were to pass a new one, or weighs in about a state abortion law that is being challenged in front of the Supreme Court.
Well, let's go back in and listen to a little more of Jeff Sessions giving his opening statement and his confirmation hearing.
Who used guns in committing crimes. As United States Attorney, my office was a national leader in gun prosecutions nearly every year. We will partner with state and local law enforcement to take down these major drug trafficking cartels and dismantle criminal gangs. We will prosecute those who repeatedly violate our borders. It will be my priority to confront these crimes vigorously, effectively, and immediately. Approximately 90% of all law enforcement officers are not federal, but they're state and local. They are the ones on the front lines. They are better educated, trained, and equipped than ever before. They are the ones who we rely on to keep our neighborhoods and playgrounds and schools safe. But in the last several years, law enforcement as a whole has been unfairly maligned and blamed for the unacceptable actions of a few of their bad actors. They believe the political leadership in the country has abandoned them. They felt they have become targets. Morale has suffered, and last year, while under intense public criticism, the number of police officers killed in the line of duty increased by 10% over 2015. And firearms deaths of police officers are up 68%. So this is a wake-up call, colleagues. It cannot continue. If we're to be more effective in dealing with rising crime, we will have to rely and work with more effectively local law enforcement, asking them to lead the way. To do that, they must know they're supported. And if I am so fortunate as to be confirmed as Attorney General, they can be assured they will have my support in their lawful duties.
Senator Sessions testifying at his own confirmation hearing, or not even testifying yet, giving his opening statement, and then there'll be testimony I guess it all counts as testimony, but then there'll be questioning by Democratic and Republican senators. Emily Bazelon, who writes frequently about legal affairs for the New York Times Magazine, is with us. And Emily, again, something very provocative there, I think, to what you were just talking about before we went back into the hearing, when you brought up places like Ferguson and Baltimore and Cleveland and the Justice Department oversight and what was discovered about endemic practices in those kinds of police departments and consent agreements that they got to change practices that were seen as racist and otherwise biased. He seemed to be indicating in the statement that we just heard that era is going to end, that the U.S. Justice Department, local law enforcement, is going to have your back now. Did you hear it that way?
Yes, I think that's the clear message. The statute that we're talking about here, Congress passed it in 1994. This was after the Rodney King beatings by the Los Angeles police. And Congress said to the Justice Department, we want you to have the power to investigate a pattern or practice of violating people's civil rights by the police, by a local law enforcement agency. And ever since that law in 94, there has been a kind of debate about how vigorously the Justice Department should enforce it. When should they step in and investigate? Often it's after a high-profile incident of something going wrong, as we've seen in some of the cities you just mentioned. And some police departments cooperate and even welcome these investigations as a reason to delve into their own practices and improve them, and others really fight back. So I think what we're seeing from Sessions here is a real move to side with local law enforcement over federal oversight.
Ahmed in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Emily Bazelon. Hi, Ahmed.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me. My question for Ms. Bazelon is that I might be wrong, but given Senator Sessions' record, it's hard to see the Justice Department supporting, moving forward with any of the rights issues, national issues regarding rights that we have right now. At best, I can see them remaining stagnant. But my question is that, could we actually, on rights issues, move backwards, as in, like, taking away rights? And, of course, I say this in the backdrop of Trump's notions of, deportation and a ban on Muslims.
Right. So, I mean, there is a range of conservative approaches to civil rights enforcement. For example, when George H.W. Bush was president, a lot of civil rights enforcement kind of continued apace and wasn't all that different than it had been before Ronald Reagan under the Carter administration. I mean, there are always some disputes, but a lot of the civil rights work can continue. I think, though, you're right to bring up immigration, because the Justice Department has oversight over the country's immigration courts and immigration judges. And also, the Attorney General can come in when there's a question about immigration law from the immigration judges, and he can, in some instances, decide it. He can say for himself what he thinks he is and what the answer is, and then the courts may very well pay attention to that. So when you talk about the prospect of deportation, even mass deportation, which Trump has discussed, then I think Sessions' record on immigration comes into play. So one thing that's striking, in 2011, Alabama, his home state, passed the most restrictive immigration law in the country, and it included a provision that to interact with any government agency, you had to have a Social Security number. So parents started keeping their kids home from schools. And Sessions was okay with that. He said that on the radio. Again, like, how much is this in line with mainstream opinion? And then the big unanswered question, which we don't know, is how would this actually play out if he was Attorney General?
Gary in Queens, you're on WNYC with Emily Bazelon. Hi, Gary.
Hi, can you hear me? You're kind of low.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. Hi, Brian. I have three questions, quick questions for Emily. And I'll stay on the line if you don't understand it. Question number one, why is conservative nominee a bad name, but liberal nominee of Obama's a good word? Number two, do you know the difference between right-wing and conservative. And the last question, you talk about civil rights and immigrants, but only U.S. persons, mostly citizens, have civil rights. Immigrants are extended statutory rights, and most of it pertains to criminal law. They're not entitled to civil rights by the Constitution.
Gary, before I get your answers to your questions from Emily, I'm just curious about your distinction, because it sounds like you have one, between conservative and right wing. Do you make that distinction?
Yes. Conservative is constitutional conservatives. They adhere to the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and principles of things like small government. They have principles. Right wing could be anything. It could be fascists. It could be right wing liberals. It could be fascists. It could be left wing or right wing.
Gary, I'm going to leave it there. I appreciate it. Emily, to his third question about people who are not, quote, U.S. persons, meaning, I guess, citizens or legal residents, that they have statutory rights but not civil rights. Is that an actual thing?
Really. I mean, it is true that there's a lot of immigration law that the courts have put beyond the reach of the Constitution, but not all of it. There are some really important questions. And so the Supreme Court in 2001 said that the due process part of the 14th Amendment, and we're talking about, you know, due process of law, that applies to undocumented immigrants in the United States. And that means that they have certain rights about the procedures that they go through before they can be detained or deported. And then, and this is relevant to our conversation earlier, in 1982, the court was looking at a law Texas passed saying that the children of undocumented immigrants could not go to school. And the court said that was unconstitutional, and the reason was that those children were protected by the Equal Protection Clause in the Constitution. So that's a really important right to remember when we're talking about this issue.
You know, thinking about the caller's distinction between conservative, which he described as principled, et cetera, and right wing, which could be anything, including fascism, I think it's actually a relevant question to what should lead the Senate to deny Jeff Sessions the post of Attorney General. A conservative president, Donald Trump, who was elected in our system of electoral votes, has the right to appoint, with the advice and consent of the Senate, an Attorney General and other cabinet members who basically reflect his views and, you know, those of the people who elected him. If somebody's too radical, Robert Bork comes to mind, then they can be tagged with that and rejected by the Senate. What's the standard, in your own opinion, for Jeff Sessions?
You know, that is a great question, and I think that the answer has everything to do with politics. So when Robert Bork was rejected for a Supreme Court position, the Democrats were in control of the Senate. And I think that if the Democrats had control of the Senate today, that, you know, that would have been a disincentive for Trump to pick someone like Sessions, who has so much opposition from liberals in the civil rights community. But the Republicans are in control of the Senate. And so presumably Sessions will be confirmed. And that's the way the politics plays out. So, you know, these questions are really up to the American electorate and the kind of people they choose to put in office.
Emily Bazelon from the New York Times Magazine, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll listen to more of the Sessions confirmation hearings in and out and talk about Obama's farewell address, which is scheduled for tonight. We'll preview that with Jamelle Bouie, chief political correspondent for Slate, next. Stay with us.